Okay. So, welcome. How's everybody enjoying the conference so far? Oh, come on. Now, if you've been to my sessions before, you know that's not a good response. So let's try this again. How's everybody enjoying the conference so far? Yeah. Thank you very much. I'll try not to ruin it for you in this session. Now, I know I appreciate you coming. I know a lot of you were here because the other session was canceled. So thanks for coming. Just an FYI, the reason the other session was canceled because the speaker in the taxi was T-boned on his way to the, so he's at the hospital. I don't think it's serious. He's just getting checked out to make sure. So if you, thoughts and prayers, he's probably okay. You might see him later in the conference, but that's why he's not slacking, right? Anybody that knows Dave's, Dave's always spot on. So if he's not here, there's a good reason. So that's a pretty good reason. All right. So who attended my big data for the SQL Ninja yesterday? Okay. So I know that, if you're DBAs in the room, so I was just having a conversation. Oh, good. But developers, I'm assuming most of you? Okay, good. Because what I don't want is to be able to have the DBAs going, hey, what are you telling my developers to do, right? So, but I'm glad you're developers. So, because in my session yesterday, I approached it from, look, from the data side, where's the data going, right? It's not just relational anymore, right? If you think of NoSQL, SQL means not only SQL. So we have to approach it of, it's just not relational anymore. So as we think about big data and we think about just the non-relational sensor data, device data, web log data, whatever that may be, that's not relational, how do we think about that? And so the organizer of this conference said, well, can you do something around big data for the .NET developer, because is this going to affect the .NET developer? And I went, sure, how do we think about that? So this is the session, and I had to think about it, and things got, I don't want to call it muddier, things got a little more not complex either. It's, with the announcement of, Cortana Analytics, right? There used to be that you had to write quite a bit of code, with Storm and Stream Analytics and some things like that, possibly Data Factory. Well, with the Cortana Analytics, that sort of becomes easier. So from a developer perspective, there's probably a little less code that you have to write. So I had to do some thinking, how do we do this from a developer? How does the big data realm affect the developer, right? And so what we're going to talk about today is three key aspects where I believe and I think where you should be focusing your efforts if you want to get into the big data space. Now, I told them yesterday, and I'm going to tell you the same thing. If you're not, I kind of put up this slide that says, look, why are you at my session? And I'm going to tell you the same thing. If you're not thinking about big data and IoT and how that affects your role, you better start thinking about that right now, right? Because if you just want to put yourself in a corner like, the old developer joke, sit in your office and have people slide food under your door while you code, right, then I think you're going to, miss the bus big time. I think, now's the time you really need to start thinking about how are these big data technologies going to affect you and your role, right, from a careers perspective, from, advancement, things like that. I think there's a great opportunity for you to start thinking about and progress your career. Right, how are these things going to start affecting your role, right? So that's what we're going to talk about. All right, so a little bit about me. I look exactly like that. And if you want any of the demos or the slides or anything like that I'm going to talk about today, email me, tweet me, happy to send them to you, okay? Now, I'm going to be honest. A lot of these things have to do with some APIs. We're going to crack open Visual Studio, and we're going to install a bunch of stuff from NuGet, and I'll show you some NuGet stuff. And a lot of these are pre-release, and a lot of these are somewhat released. And I'm going to be very honest. We'll go as far as we can go in 60 minutes. We may finish a little early, depending on how things go, so I'm going to be completely honest with you. The very last demo is because of, we're going to talk about MapReduce. Any Hadoop people in the room? So this is all brand new to you. Awesome. So I'm assuming that's why you're here. Good. All right, so the very last demo, I didn't quite get it working, but I'm going to show you code, and hopefully that's going to be good enough because they're rolling out new versions of the API, and things are kind of, I don't want to say broken, but kind of in change right now, but we'll at least get you to the point where you go, okay, I get it. We good with that? All right. Okay. Good. So let's kind of walk through this and see where kind of these pieces fit, because what we're talking about is a lot of these pieces where word is my, you know, we're going to talk about, and I'll show you kind of an agenda. We're going to talk about Hadoop, HD Insight. We're going to talk about some MapReduce stuff. We're going to talk about Storm. Where do these things fit, right? So how do I, how do these big data pieces from a .NET perspective affect my job? So we're really talking about sort of that that transformation layer, right? We have data. If you talk about, you know, from the very far left, we have event producers. There's these things, could be, you know, applications or sensors or devices. Your phone, doesn't matter, right? Anybody familiar with like the Raspberry Pi and the Tesla boards? These are huge, right? These are things that, you know, this, they talked about the connected cow stuff yesterday, right? They've actually got some of these things strapped to cows, walking around where they, you know, can do predictive analytics on these things. Cars, same thing, right? These little devices, they're generating data, and it's not relational data, right? This data is being just generated mass amounts of data, right? So we have to stream that data in, and that's things like, and that you see on the transformation, we think things like Storm, stream analytics. That stuff's that's getting routed to like an event hub where we want to do event processing on that data. We may then do, hey, I want to do, you know, from there that may get stored into a data storage, for example, either Azure SQL Database or SQL Server or Hadoop / HD Insight, where we can do other analytics on that data, right? So we're talking really about that transformation layer. You see Apache Storm on HD Insight, that's what we're going to talk about. We talked down there, we also see, you know, HBase, Apache HBase on HD Insight. We're not going to talk about HBase, but, you know, anything that has to do with Hadoop, we're going to talk about Hadoop and MapReduce and things like that, okay? So this is kind of where we're fitting into the spectrum of things. Hopefully this picture helps you make sense of where, you know, the items we're going to talk about fit into the end-to-end picture, okay? We good? All right. So let's begin by talking about HD Insight, right? So I'm going to give a brief overview of Hadoop and HD Insight so you know what we're talking about, all right? And then we'll get going. All right, so if we look at the Hadoop, only a few people raised their hand when I talked about Hadoop, so let me give you a quick introduction of what Hadoop is, right? So SQL people in the room, most of you SQL people, all right. So if you're going to get start working with Hadoop and HD Insight, then you need to understand what Hadoop is, especially from a developer perspective. We talked about this yesterday in my session for from a SQL's perspective. Hadoop is mass processing, right? If you're going against SQL Server, typically we think of SQL Server, this mass, this big box, and it scales by throwing more memory and CPU at it, right? We may do table partitioning, things like that to try to scale out. But typically, you know, when we're doing like month-end jobs or, you know, quarter-end jobs, and I do this mass processing, we, you know, we get SQL Server to just churn and churn and churn, right? But that's relational. So if we have to think about outside relational, there's things, how do we process unrelational data? Sensor data, device data, web log data, you know, application data that's not relational. And this is where Hadoop comes in. Imagine, you know, collecting all this data, terabytes and petabytes and exabytes of data. How do you process this data? You know, can you pull it into SQL Server and then start processing it? No, this is where Hadoop comes into the picture. Hadoop says, I'm going to take all this data and distribute that data and the processing of that data across many, many, many physical nodes, hundreds of nodes, thousands of nodes, tens of thousands of nodes if I need to, right? So imagine trying to process, there was a slide yesterday I showed that said, Twitter generates 1 terabyte of data a day. That's 30 terabytes of data a month, 31 depending on how many days, 28 if there's February, right? So at that point, how do we start processing all this data? You know, do you throw 30 terabytes of data into SQL Server, or do you say, hey, let me start processing that data across many, many, many nodes? This is what Hadoop is, right? And we'll talk. We'll see this in a little bit when we talk about MapReduce. Hadoop works this way. I've got physical nodes, and every physical node has an HDFS layer. This is where the data in an on-premises environment. This is where the data resides. I pull data in, and when I do processing, it takes all that data and distributes that data across all the nodes in my Hadoop cluster. Okay. On top of that, if I need to, I'm going to do MapReduce jobs, right? We'll talk about MapReduce in a few minutes, okay? If I need to do processing on that, like if I need to do ETL processing, or if I want to run SQL queries on top of that, I can use things like Scoop or HiveQL. We're not going to talk about that. But this is Hadoop, mass processing of data, terabytes, exabytes, you know, yottabytes of data, where I can just, don't have to worry about it. If I need more processing power, I just spin up another node, right? Things like that. Make sense? All right? All right. So this is how things work, right? That's the architecture, but let's look at what happens, right? Every time I do a job, I have the HDFS layer, and every cluster has a head node, we call it, or a name node, and then multiple data nodes. Those data nodes are all the nodes in the cluster. When I execute a job, doesn't matter what the job does, it's got a job tracker, and all that job tracker does is says, all right, I've got this job, and execute this tasks on these nodes. So this is the MapReduce layer. So if you look at anything you do in Hadoop, has a, basically, if you look under the covers, it's a MapReduce job. We'll talk about MapReduce in a little bit, okay? Hopefully this is making sense, right? Mass processing, being able to process, you know, just mass amounts of data very easily and very quickly based on the number of nodes, okay? HD Insight is simply Hadoop as a service in the cloud. That's it, right? So we basically took Hortonworks, which is Apache Hadoop, made it as a service. So we're actually going to talk about and use that in our demo. So when we talk about HD Insight, just assume that, just know that it's Hadoop as a service, okay? It is Hadoop, okay? So how does this affect me and how do I do this? So as a developer, you know, how does this, if I want to do mass processing of data, how do I do this as a developer? As a DBA, you're thinking, well, really doesn't affect me, but if I need to spin up a cluster or if I need to execute Hive queries or jobs, if I need to MapReduce, this is where this comes in, okay? So from big data for a developer, the first thing you need to do is how do I work with Hadoop, how do I work with HD Insight to create and manage clusters, okay? That's step one. So that's what we're gonna do. So we're gonna jump out and we're gonna do a demo on how to work with a cluster, okay? All right, so let's jump out of the demo machine. My demo machine doesn't freeze. Oh, great way to start a demo. Come on. Nope. Awesome. This is sweet. Nope, we don't want to do that. There we go. Thank you. Just took it a minute to warm up. We are starting so good. All right, so the first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna fire up Visual Studio. Who's familiar with NuGet? A lot of you, good. Because a lot of these things are gonna be found in NuGet, okay? So if you go to NuGet, let's just close all of these. And do NuGet.org, right? And you search like Hadoop. Let's do Microsoft Hadoop. Okay. These are a lot of things that we're going to be working with today, right? We're going to download and install the Microsoft Windows Azure Hadoop client. And we're also going to do there's another one down here called it's actually called this one. It's the Microsoft Windows Azure Management. Microsoft.WindowsAzure.Management.HDInsight, another Hadoop package, right? Both of these allow us to work with Hadoop, okay? So I'm gonna create a new console package. So I'm gonna say new project. I'm gonna create a new console package. I'm not gonna write a lot of code, right? I've got that code, I'm just gonna do a bunch of copy paste, right? So I'm gonna create a console application and just call this my Hadoop client, okay? Once this spins up, I'm going to do a couple things, right? So first thing I'm going to do is, if you're familiar with Package Manager, so it's simply Tools, NuGet Package Manager, Package Manager Console. Click on that, you get this Package Manager Console window down here. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go in here and I'm going to say Install Package. So I'm going to install a couple packages first. So I'm going to install this one. Right, and that's going to install a lot of things that will allow me to work with things like, you know, HD Insight management, Hadoop management. So create jobs, do cluster management, right? So if I want to create a cluster, delete a cluster, you know, modify clusters. So I want to scale it and add nodes and things like that, right? So this will just take a second. And then what we're going to go do is we're going to install this one. Okay, that's done. Let's go install that one. Oops. Need the entire thing. All right, so let's install that. That'll only take a second as well. Okay, any questions so far? Well, this will only take a second, but any questions so far? Making sense? We good? Haven't put you to sleep yet? Okay, good. Lunch is later. You can fall asleep in the afternoon. Okay. All right. What we're going to do now is let's go into, while this is installing, let's go add we're going to add a class. So we're going to say add class, and we're simply going to call this class, let's call it constants. Actually, let me make sure I want to spell this right. So when I copy paste code, there's not a big deal. I'm going to call it constants. All right. Okay, so in my constants class, what I'm going to do, and notice in my project when I installed, you know, Visual Studio, you notice all these additional things that it created, right? So there you see HDI Insight Management, there's your configuration, it installed some OData. So a bunch of these, you know, it actually installed Windows Azure Storage for me, so because if I want to go get data, I might actually go get it from there. So it installed a bunch of libraries for me. Yes? Oh, this is, yeah, okay, good question. The question is, what framework am I using? Let's look at the properties of my project real quick. So this is Visual Studio 2015, okay? This does work in Visual Studio 2015, so I'm running 4.5.2, but you can set it to whatever you want, right? I think in order to use these API libraries, you have to use, or these NuGet packages, you got to use at least 4.5, maybe 4. I haven't tried it with 4, but at least 4.5, okay? All right, now that I've got those installed, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down here, and this is sort of not quite best practices, right? But just to make for demo purposes, what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab all of this information, okay? And I'll walk you through this in a second, okay? So let's put this here. Okay. Now, if you look at this, what this really says is, oops, let me hide that. So there's a couple pieces of information here, and I know this is being recorded, so I will be changing my passwords after. Okay. So feel free to hack it all you want. All right. So what do you look here? So there's my important name is the cluster name, the thumbprint. Okay. This is. Let me back up 1 second because this is important. Anytime you're dealing with and working with the through .NET, and you're working through trying to get to Azure, you have to create a certificate, okay? And then you have to use that thumbprint to go access, to start working with Azure, okay? So the first thing you do is, everybody familiar with Make Cert? Who's familiar with Make Cert? All right, let me show you. This is gonna be important, so let me show you Make Cert real quick. Where's my videos? Okay, I think it was here. All right, so let me grab that. Let me put this in a separate window. All right, so make cert, this is a make cert statement. So essentially what you're saying is, I don't think I grabbed the entire thing, whoops. Yeah, that's it. All right. So, anytime you're dealing with Azure, you need it any development language. You need a certificate, right? So, Make Cert is installed with. It used to be installed with Visual Studio. Now it's installed with the Windows SDK, right? I'm running Windows 10, so I actually have that. Let me show you that here. It's just so you know, I'm going to be very honest and open here. So I think it's here. If you go to this URL right here. Right, I'm running Windows 10, so I've got the demo, right? Windows Software Development Kit for Windows 10, right? So Make Cert is now installed with that. It used to be installed with Visual Studio. It's now installed with this. Download this, and it's simply you're executing this URI to make a certificate. And all it does is it creates a certificate that gets installed into your certificate store. That certificate then needs to be uploaded to Azure, okay? Multi-step process, create your certificate, and then upload that certificate into Azure, okay? Because when you then pass this information, Azure's gonna go, do I have this, you know, it's gonna say, do I have this information? Can I authenticate, okay? So I have the certificate. I just, this is very simple. Make your own certificate, right? Create your certificate, upload it to Azure, then you're done. What you need from there in your certificate store, manage user certificates, right? So I created that. There's my certificate, right? Microsoft Azure, right? And what I grabbed is the thumbprint. Okay, you need the thumbprint, right? So once I grab the thumbprint, that's the information that I put in here. Okay, so there's my thumbprint. I also need the subscription ID, so I'm going to the right subscription. I then need, just when I create an HD Insight cluster, I need the username and password, and then any storage account information, because when I go in, it's going to put the files, install files and data files, it's going to go into Azure Storage, right? So that is this information right here, okay? And then there's the container where I'm going to put what's going to actually store the files. Okay, so that's the information that I need. All right, so next step, I'm actually going to go, let's go back to here, and I need to add a few using statements. Okay, now these are interesting, right? So there's my Windows Azure.management.hdinsight. There's my information to be able to use the certificates. I'm going to use IO and threading later on, and there's my client information. Simple as that, okay? All right, next step, what I'm going to go do is I'm actually going to add the code to go and create a cluster. So that's this method right here, create cluster. So I'm going to put that down here, okay? And what I'm also going to do is you got this method down here called list clusters, so I'm going to grab list clusters, because when I create it, I want to be able to go back and say, all right, show me all my clusters. So this is an opportunity to say, hey, is it from a developer perspective, what clusters do I have out there? So let me add this one. Okay, so there's my two. Let's compile this to make sure there's no issues. Okay, awesome. All right. So let me run this. So what I'm going to do, let's walk through this just really quick. So again, since I'm dealing with certificates, I need this information. And I'm going to go get that information from my thumbprint. Go get the subscription ID and the certificate information, and then connect to HD Insight based on this credential information. And there's all the parameters for creating my cluster. And it's just cluster create parameter. There's the name. There's the location I want to put it in. I could have put these in the constants as well. There's a storage account, container, the username and password, and how many nodes I want, and then go create the cluster, right? And then I call list clusters because once it's done, I want to go same thing. Now, there's better ways, more, you know, best practices to do this, because I do this a lot, right? Connect. I could do this somewhere else, but just for demo purposes, this is not the right way to do it, but just for demo purposes, all right? And then once I have my client, I'm just client.listclusters, and I iterate through those, all right? So let's run this. This may take a minute because it's going to go create my cluster. So let's run that. Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I got to do this. Sorry. That was fast. Yeah. Okay. That would help a lot, wouldn't it? All right. Let's do it now. Let's try this again. Okay. There we go. Now, while that's running, let's go out and just to show you that, I'll log into azure.com. Okay, give it a minute here. Okay, so I've logged into my portal. If we go down to my HD Insight, you'll see, there it is. There it is creating right there. Okay, so it's been accepted. There's the name we gave it. Remember, it's a type Hadoop, so it's running. All right, this will probably take a couple minutes, right? So this is where I do my song and dance, okay? Any questions so far? None? I'm either that good or I've just completely, like, what this guy's talking about? We good? All right. While this is creating, let's go back and let's walk through the next steps. Okay. Let's continue the presentation. Okay. All right. So we talked about HD Insight Hadoop. right? So this is mass processing. What we've done is we created a two-node cluster. Now, remember in our slides, every cluster had a head node. So that we created a two-node cluster. And every cluster, every node has four cores. So you just got to be careful and do the math, how many nodes or how many cores you're being used in your subscription, right? I just did two nodes, right? I can at any time go and say, well, let me scale that up, scale that down based on need, okay? All right, let's talk about, that shouldn't say MapReduce. That should actually say, MapReduce. All right, so we're going to talk about MapReduce now, okay, and Hive. So what is MapReduce, right? So think about it this way, right? What if I want to know, for example, I've got all these Word documents out there, and I want to do a word count, okay? I want to do a word count and look for specific words in there and how many times these words are used in all these documents or even a specific document, okay? MapReduce says I'm going to first map, which means go out and take the job execution and pull in the documents, so map the job to the documents, right? And then reduce. So it then says, okay, well, here's the words also I'm looking for. And the reduce says, all right, I found X number of counts for these words. Now reduce that. So instead of saying, well, you know, I found the word Hadoop, you know, 1111111111 all these times, the reduce says, now just aggregate all this data information back and reduce the data back to something that's more manageable. So I found Hadoop 1,000 times. So instead of saying Hadoop 11111, it'll say Hadoop 1,000, right? So it's that make sense? So it goes out and says, map essentially says, go map all the data, basically tell the job, here's what I'm looking for. And reduce says, all right, I've executed the job, I've mapped it, now reduce that data into basically a summary format. Okay, that's MapReduce. So how does it work? So first we've got all the data, we take our files, so when we execute and run the job says, all right, here's all the files, distribute all those files to all the nodes in the data, right? So you can see it all populated on all the nodes. Right, so one node can hold many files, and if I need to bring more files in there, it's going to start distributing more files. And if it needs to, I can create another node in that and distribute files to that. Right, it doesn't matter because the head node manages all of this. It says, all right, if I create more nodes, the head node's job is, all right, we'll start distributing files to that node as well. Okay, so we store the data. So in this case, it could be Word documents, you know, hundreds of thousands of Word documents. Okay. Second process says, all right, well, here's my MapReduce function, okay? Now, so in this example, I've got MapReduce, so two different functions. I've got my map function and my reduce function. Typically, they'll be separate. So my map function says, all right, run this, and the head note says, when I execute this, it's gonna take that code and distribute that code to all the nodes in my cluster, okay? Does that make sense? All the nodes in my cluster. That then runs all the nodes in the cluster, then run that data back, executes that job, so it says, all right, well, he's looking for Hadoop, he's looking for .NET, he's looking for Microsoft, he's looking for New Zealand, he's looking for Ignite, right? These are the words he's looking for. Execute these, go look for these words, give me the data back, right? And then the give me back says that's where the reduce happens. So give me I found Hadoop 1,000 times, I found New Zealand 10,000 times, I found, you know, Ignite 500 times, whatever, right? So give me the reduced data back, okay? And at that point, I've essentially completed the circle at that point. Does that make sense? Okay, not that difficult, not that complicated, it's just map, reduce, okay? Anytime you do anything in Hadoop, under the covers, it really boils it down to a MapReduce job. You can go into the logs and say, hey, there's a MapReduce job, doesn't matter what you're doing, okay? It's a MapReduce job, all right. There's the workflow, right? A MapReduce job usually splits the input data into independent chunks, like we said, and distributes that data and by the map task in a completely parallel manner. And this is what we were saying, right? It takes that data and just distributes that pow in parallel out to the nodes, okay? The framework then sorts the outputs out of the maps, which are then input in the reduce task. So that's what we explained, right? It distributes that mass parallel, brings the data back, reduces it into something more manageable, okay? All right, that is MapReduce. What I'm going to do, hopefully our cluster is done, okay? I'm not going to do a MapReduce job yet. I want to make sure that, because we're going to talk about Storm in a second. Yeah, question, yes?
When you add nodes to the cluster, does it rebalance what you've already put in there, redistribute your data?
It doesn't redistribute at that point. It's going to say, you know what? I want to make sure I'm not lying to you. I don't know. right? And I think it depends on what I heard before is it basically says, you know, if you're adding like one node, you know, it may do some, you know, probably won't do a lot, right? But if you're adding 100 nodes, you know, it's going to say, hey, I've got a massive workload. So I think it does do some level of redistribution, right? But we have to be careful about the redistribution. I think the head node manages that because it says, hey, if I'm already processing this data, and depending on how much data is coming in and I'm saving to this, right, then it may or may not do, so the head node will do that. And to be honest, the question is, hey, you know, let me just, for recording, the question is, does it do, if I'm adding nodes to the cluster, does it do redistribution of data, right? You know, I gotta be honest, from my perspective, I don't care, right? I'm gonna let the head node manage that. If I've got data coming in and it's just processing this data, I'm gonna let the head node do that because I don't have to worry about that. So, you know, at that point, you know, not to be rude, I don't care what's going on under the scenes. Performance is okay, right? You may, if it's going to do some level of distribution, when you're dealing with that number of nodes anyway, then, right, I don't think, you know, I think performance will be negligible at that point. Yeah?
Do you know if the Hadoop is aware of the rack space?
I'm sorry?
Do you know if the Hadoop is aware of the rack space, like your region?
Yes, in this case. So let me show you. So when I created this, so... You're talking from the as a service, right? The question is it aware, is it region aware, right? Yes, and I don't think, to be honest, I don't think you can do multi-region, right? Because in this case, when we say, let me just walk you through this real quick. When we say HD Insight custom create, right? So let me just do test cluster. Oh, sorry, thank you. All right, good, thank you. Test cluster, test to make sure it's available, Hadoop, 2.6, right? It's going to ask me where I'm going to put this cluster, right? And it doesn't give me, so everything's going to go in that region, right? So if I say, you know, Southeast Asia or West Europe or West US or whatever, all my nodes are going to go there. And then at that point, once I've created it, when I scale, I can't, at least currently, and I really don't, if you think about how Azure works, this is going to put, if I say I want 100 nodes right now, it's going to be all 100 nodes in whatever region I pick, okay? But it's fixed to that region. Once it's created, even after that fact, when I scale up and scale down, if I scale up, I can't say, hey, I'm going to scale up from 100 to 200, put some of these in another region, right? You can't do that right now. And let me tell you why, okay? Anybody know why? One, latency is going to be one, right? What's the other one? Geo-redundancy, no, not quite.
Money,
right? The way Azure works, the way Azure says, all right, data into a data center is free all day long, but once it went, but data that leaves the data center, there's a cost associated with that, right? So you're going to be dealing with, if I have to, you know, if I'm doing geo-redundant clusters, one, I'm going to deal with latency, and two, I'm going to deal with just a mass amount of data, you know, going from one data center to the other. So right now it's... So then we have to actually back up, and I'm stalling because I'm waiting for this cluster create so we can continue. But we're kind of, you know, at that point, you know, if you're thinking geo-redundancy in clusters, you're going to have to ask yourself why you would want kind of a geo-redundant cluster. Okay. Okay. I thought I probably should have had a pre-created cluster for this, and I apologize. This shouldn't take too much longer. Any other questions? Is this making sense, everybody? Yeah? I haven't put you to sleep yet.
So if I create a cluster, the money is
something
for storage?
Yeah, okay, so let's talk cost, because that's what you're asking, right? How much does it cost? Two things, right? So when it creates, in this case, since we're in a PaaS offering, right? Each node in that cluster is a VM, essentially, right? So how do we, so from a virtual machine perspective, there's two costs you're going to be occurring, right? Compute for the VM, for each VM, okay? So depending on the size, remember, so when I picked it, you know, what size of VM do I want, right? And then the storage, right? So pop quiz really quick while we're waiting. How much does it cost to store a 1 gig file in Azure? Anybody know? Per month, for 30 days. Yeah, about 7 cents, right? So when we talk about cluster creation, right, one of the things, so let's go back, let me go back a second, because this is going to be important for cluster creation, even from a developer perspective. Let's go back to, that slide. Okay, so remember I said every node has an HDFS cluster, right? So if you were to tear down, so HD Insight says, hey, I'm going to use, it's just a Hadoop as a service. All right, so I'm going around this route because I want to, this is important because I want to talk cost, because as a developer, you do need to know this, right? So what happens is that, you know, when I spin up a cluster, every node in that cluster is a VM, right? So now I have compute costs for that node, right? So if I spin up a, you know, depending on the size of that cluster or that node, right, depends on how much I'm going to get charged for that node, okay? Then I have storage for that, okay? Two things I want to talk about, right? Best practice states, if I'm spinning up a 100-node cluster, do I want to keep that 100-node cluster running all month? No. So what is best practice state? Spin it up when I need it, tear it down when I need it, right? And yesterday I showed how to do that using PowerShell, right? About 10 lines of PowerShell code, spin it up, and it doesn't matter, too, because it doesn't matter if it's a 100-node cluster or a 2-node cluster. It's going to take about the same amount of time because you're just spinning up VMs in parallel, right? Now, because in a typical Hadoop environment, you're learning much more about Hadoop than you probably wanted to in this session. When I spin up a Hadoop cluster and my data is on HDFS, if I tear down that cluster, where does my data go? You lose it. You lose your data. So this is why in the demo we said, hey, when I create my cluster, I want to point that my data to Azure Blob Storage. Because when I tear down my cluster, if I have my data in Azure Blob Storage, where does my data go? It stays, right? So as when I create my cluster, say, all right, I want my data in Azure Storage. So that way I can create and tear down my cluster all day long without any issue. Okay, yes? Ask that one more time.
What is the cost for Azure Blob Storage in relation to HDFS?
Same. Doesn't matter if it's a 1 gig. You know, if I had a 1 gig file, it's per gigabyte. So if I have, doesn't matter. However much data I have there, if I've got 10 gig, 1 gig, 100 gig, it's per gig, right? And it gets cheaper the more data you put up there, right? So which is much less expensive than your SAN, right? Things like that. Okay. All right, this is taking much longer than I wanted it to take, and I apologize. All right, and the other thing was, so from a cost perspective too, so spin it up, tear it down when you don't need it, and put your data in Azure Blob Storage, okay? Let's keep going. All right, what we're gonna do is we're gonna go through all the slides, let this finish, and then we'll go back and just do demo, especially since we only have 20 minutes left. Okay, Storm. Now, our Storm is the ability to say, remember we've got our HD Insight cluster, right? How do we get data into that HD Insight cluster? Then how do we do, this is what Storm is. Apache Storm says, I am just going to stream data. Apache Storm is distributed fault tolerant open source real-time processing. I want to stream data in, right? So there's Apache Storm and Stream Analytics is really the same thing. Stream Analytics is Microsoft, but we actually took a Storm as well and can run that in Azure, right? So HD Insight provides full Apache Storm. So this allows me to say, hey, I want to run and bring a stream data in. And we talk about, you know, again, this is where a user developer come in, because I am going to kind of take a tangent really quick, because we talked about yesterday, we talked about one of the V's of big data was velocity, right? If you remember that. So velocity says how fast we need to stream data in, because how fast we need to make business decisions on that data. Right, so this is where you as a developer have a key role in this perspective, because you're saying, okay, I can actually write code to stream this data in and either run it to HD Insight or some other storage mechanism to Event Hub to start making real-time business decisions on that data. So if you're a developer and you're running Stream Analytics, this is perfect, right? So while this is spinning up, let's actually go out and let's do that. So the topology of Storm is this. Okay, so it's simply, I've got bolts and spouts, okay? A bolt simply says, this is my input, and a spout is, where's it going? Okay, simple as that. Okay, so I've got my bolt and spout, right? So Bolt says I'm gonna have a bolt from Twitter, a bolt from SQL Server, a bolt from some other data source, and then a spout says here's where's my data going, right? So my data could go to a website, it could go to back to another relational database, things like that, right? All right. So let's jump out. Let me do while this is finishing up. Let me show you this Storm Twitter sample. Okay. So it's as simple as this. When I go create, let me go create a new project. I'm not going to create a new project, but one of the things in New Visual Studio that you can actually download is if I say new project here, right? I can actually say, let me scroll down to HD Insight, right? And there's a Hive application, there's a Storm hybrid application, Storm application, Storm sample, right? There are some plugins you can actually download that actually says, I want to download the Twitter sample, Storm Twitter sample. So you can actually, right through the Visual Studio, create a Storm Twitter sample, right? But let's look at this. So here I have my Twitter sample configuration. And what I'm doing is I'm saying, all right, I am listening for, right? I'm going to Twitter, and I'm listening for Microsoft and SQL Relay underscore UK, things like that. So here's the Twitter I'm listening for any tweets, okay, that I'm looking for. So I've got my bolt. That's my spout. So there's my bolt. And so I've got a bolt and a spout, and the bolt says it's a Twitter. So my bolt is Twitter. I'm listening from Twitter for these keywords in any tweets, okay? Not that. And then what I'm doing is I'm plugging these into the topology, right? So if we wanted to see this, so you guys got your phones? We're going to see if we can get this to run. Who's got your phone? You got your phones handy that can tweet? We're going to play a little game. Hold on real quick. One second. VM is still creating. All right, there we go. Let's get rid of this now. Whoop. Sorry, I had to pull something up. All right, so if you start tweeting right now, this should work, right? So if you start tweeting things like, Xbox, for example, right? So if you start just tweeting Xbox, we'll start listening for tweets on Xbox. There you go. So where are we at? So pretty soon we should start seeing this heating up for tweets with Xbox down here. If it works correctly. All right. So this makes sense. So what we've did is, and I know it's a very simple example of Storm, but what we did was said, all right, Storm essentially says, so if you go back to the code, we actually wrote a Storm sample that said from Visual Studio. So you as a developer, you're going, hey, I've got I want to pull data in from any type of source. So it could be Twitter, it could be relational database, it could be sensor data, device data, it doesn't matter. Phone data, it doesn't matter, right? I'm pulling this data in. And then I'm going to send that data out. But what we're doing here is we're listening to that data, and because it's Twitter data, we're analyzing that data. Say we're looking for specific words. In this case, we're looking for specific words. In this case, Xbox, and we're looking for words to say, all right, let me now take that, and we can shove that into things like some other relational database. Here we're pushing it out to a SignalR, like you saw in that first slide, a SignalR website to listen to that and say, all right, we want to see how many people are tweeting Xbox, okay, on that site. I don't know why it's not picking up. You guys should be tweeting Xbox, okay? I know you guys are, but I don't know why. Okay, but this should be working. All right. Okay, what I'm going to do, let me do this then, because I don't want to waste any more time, and I'm going to actually go out and run one more. Let me show you how to do MapReduce. Then we'll go out, because MapReduce is an interesting one. We talked about MapReduce. This is where you, developers, say, all right, I'm going to do some MapReduce jobs. right? And this is where, as a developer, you can have more granular control. So whenever we do things in HD Insight and Hadoop, it does things under the covers in MapReduce. However, what if you wanted a more granular, fine-grained control over how that MapReduce job runs, right? This is where the API client comes into play, because you can actually do MapReduce jobs through your .NET code and have more fine-grained control over what happens to your in this MapReduce job, right? So what we're doing here is we're saying, all right, same thing. So I've got this application, and I'm basically saying, great. All right, I think there's something else. That was probably the website. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, all right, I'm going to do a MapReduce job, okay? And I'm simply connecting to my Hadoop cluster, passing information, and then what I'm saying here is, so remember there's two things that you need. You need the mapper, you need the reducer, and then you can, there's several ways to do this. The way I did it here is I said I'm going to create basically a job, and I'm going to run that through the job, right? So in this case, I'm doing a custom MapReduce job, and I'm saying, all right, connect to my cluster, and then run my MapReduce job. And I'm basically saying, all right, MapReduce execute job, the square root job. This is going out and going to do some math for me, okay? So there's my square root mapper, and this is simply saying go get a file, right, and go get a file that I've specified had some data in it, so it's a simple text file that has some numbers in it, right, and do math.square root, okay, and then says emit key value, go, okay, go execute that job. This guy's job, the square root, actually, we're looking at the wrong one. That's the one, right? So the Hadoop job configuration says go execute this job. Okay, go execute the job. There's the in my path from go into that path, WASB path. In there is this file. Is this file test.txt? It's got a bunch of numbers in it. Go do a MapReduce job on that. So the square root's job, mappers say go execute this job. And first it does the mapper. And notice a couple things. It inherits one from the mapper base. Not really very complicated. It's a very simple example, but it simply says, all right, do just math.square root, right? So go out and take this. Remember what we saw on the slides. Here's the job. This is what I want you to go execute. Now go take this and all the nodes in the cluster and execute this job in all the nodes in the cluster, right? So take that file and distribute that. Right, and then what it says is, all right, when I'm done, go do the reducer. Okay, so bring that data back, values.toString. Okay, so the first parameter says, look, if there's an issue, give me the error back. Otherwise, bring that data back. Right, but everything is controlled from the square root job. Okay, and it says, there's the path for the data. Now put the results in this output file. Okay, MapReduce output. Go put the results there, right? I could put it if I want to. I go put it in the, bring that back into the console. But it's a multi-step process, and this is the demo where I'm like, okay, I can't run this because I think we're migrating to the API. But the same concept applies, right? I simply say, call the job, execute the job. There's the job I want you to go execute. There's the source. There's the destination, because I'm running the configuration. Map it, just like we saw, take the data, distribute that data. Here's the data I want you to go find and execute, and then reduce that data down into, all right, give me the square root. So give me the results of that. Give me those results, okay? We can simply do a word count as well, right? A simple MapReduce word count. I can say, here's all the files, here's all the documents, go. And here's the words I want you to look for, and give me a word count reduce job back, right? So I'm looking for Hadoop, count all those words, right, things like that, okay? Okay, I can't run this demo, but does this make sense? I know this one's kind of disappointing. I'm sorry that the Hadoops, but does this make sense? I've done a MapReduce job. There is there's some documentation out there on how to do this, but this is where you, as a developer, are saying, all right, I want to do. Either, you know, I want more fine-grained control over how MapReduce executes in my HD Insight cluster, right? Because typically what we do is we go execute a job. It doesn't matter what that job is. Hadoop is going to just do its own MapReduce. But this is where you say, look, I want to go execute a job, and I want control over how that MapReduce works, okay? And this is where I think there's many scenarios where you get, where this comes into play here. Let's go make sure that this has to be done by now. Yay! Finally. All right. So when you go back here, right? So my cluster's done. We should have output on how my Hadoop client, right? We should have got output here. So let's continue this, right? Because now the next step is, we talked about MapReduce, we talked about creating the cluster, but now, you know, what we talked about yesterday is, what if I wanted to run a Hive query, a simple Hive query? Even a Hive query does MapReduce under the scenes, right? But what if I would just run a simple Hive query? So what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna actually go back into my Word document, and I'm gonna take these two. So I'm gonna do Hive operation and wait for job. I'm gonna paste this right here. Okay, and then we'll interrogate these real quick. All right, same thing, right? This is the same thing as going into the Hadoop console and typing select star for, what we're doing here is we're just executing a statement that says show tables, right? Give me all the tables back in HD Insight or Hadoop, okay? Same thing, what we're doing here is we're saying this is our job parameters, so there's the job name and there's the status folder. Really, the status folder is if I want to write output from the job status, put it in this folder. The two pieces of information we need are that one and that one. These are the same. You see this from the other ones, but what we're saying is, hey, here's the job certificate credentials for that. There's my job submission client factory. I'm going to go execute this job through the client factory and say, okay, go execute this job, okay? What we should get back is, and what we have here is we'll see executing Hive job. Wait for job completion says, is this one down here. It says, look, just loop, right? Don't execute the console immediately. I want feedback. Tell me how the job's going, right? So if we execute this, we'll actually go up and do this. And we'll say that. Okay. So we're going to just do a Hive operation. And this, you know, if we look at this, this isn't that complicated really. And we can make it, as we could be very granular as we want. This could actually say create table, blah, 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 blah. You know, alter table, whatever. Insert into, or not insert into, you can't do that. Drop table. So any almost Hive QL statement that you can do through the, you know, you can do here. It is executing a Hive QL statement. So any syntax you can do through Hadoop, you can do right through the API. This could be any type of syntax. We're just simply saying, hey, show me the tables, right? So if we execute this, right, this shouldn't take that long. You should see it'll say as, because what it's doing is just, again, waiting for job completion. So it's, yay. Is my job definition messed up? Oh, man. All right. Well, I apologize. That is not cool. This worked this morning. All right, so but essentially what that would do is that would go back and give us a result that said, here's the tables. Now, when you first create your cluster, we didn't create any tables, but there's one default table in there that would actually give us a table back. So we could actually say create table whatever, and it would show us all the tables in there. I don't know why this erred, but we're not going to spend time debugging that. But again, it's fairly simple. Once you've got, you know, again, what you're seeing here is not best practice, but, you know, you do all your connection stuff in someplace else. But simply you're saying, hey, I want to go execute a job. And this job could be anything. This is a Hive query, but I'm saying, I'm basically saying, go get me the, do a Hive operation. This is a Hive operation, so a Hive query, Hive QL. We didn't talk about Hive QL at all. But Hive QL could be, you know, in any type of Hive QL SQL statement, right? And we're just going to execute that, right? We talked about jobs, and our job is simply, I want to do a MapReduce job. This MapReduce jobs could be anything. Again, this is a very simple example. We're just doing a square root on some numbers. This could be a word count. It could be any type of MapReduce job that you want to execute against your data, right? MapReduce is simply, you know, aggregate data. Give me, if I've got just a ton of data out there and I don't want, it makes it things more manageable. If I've got a lot of data out there and I want to reduce that into something that's much more readable, much more manageable to work with, not, you know, exabytes of data out there, right? Okay, let's jump back. I apologize. So the cluster creation took way too long. It typically doesn't take that long. And that last one failed, and I apologize for that. But what I'll do is I'm happy to share these if you want to email me. Let me go back and put my contact information back up. I will get that working. But really, if you guys want to... if you guys email me, I'm happy to send you this code, the steps to get everything working, and I'll send you the working projects, right? Happy to do that. Hopefully this was helpful. I know a lot of these are, especially these SDKs, are in, especially with the Hadoop, some of these are in beta, are in preview, but they do work, and I'm happy to get, you know, send these to you so you can start playing with and experiment with them. Again, I apologize for the long cluster creation. It typically doesn't take that long, but I will get the MapReduce job working, and I'll get the Hive query working. So anyway, I appreciate you coming. Hopefully this was helpful. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.